Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang. Welcome along to Chinwag with yours truly, Sister Bang Bang of the Manchester Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Stand by for lots of malicious gossip, wicked chit-chat,
and nothing but the whole truth.
No way.
It's Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang.
What's more?
Today's show contains words of wisdom, sublime words, and rude words too. So if you're of a nervous disposition, fly away, my pretty. If, however, you're made of sterner stuff, then settle back for another fabulous edition of... And have I got a fabulous show just for you. Now, back before Chinwag Bump started, I listened to a podcast with some gobby sister. Talk? You bet she could. And I was hooked. Joy Bomb was the show and the mouth was Sister Indica. And if Sister Indica can do a show, then damn, so can I. A while back, Indica interviewed moi via the wonders of Skype. So today I'm doing the same. Manchester and Florida combined. And I'm guessing it won't be the last time. And as usual, I started our chat with those immortal words. Who the hell are you?
Well, my name is Sister Indica. I am a sister of perpetual indulgence, currently a member of the South Florida Sisters. I'm a drag nun, a liberator, a glamour puss, and above all else, I'm your homegirl for life.
Where did that come from? I was fascinated when you say that on your shows. Homegirl for life.
Have you ever seen those t-shirts that say, Jesus is my homeboy?
No.
It's an American thing, okay?
Okay.
So okay. It says, Jesus is my homeboy, which I always thought those were so hilarious, those shirts. And then when I joined the order, you take vows for life. So you take lifelong vows, meaning that you are a nun forever. So... With the way that I like to do my ministry is I like people to feel like they know me, that they're like my friend, and I want to impart to them that this is a lifelong thing. I am here for them forever. This is not something that I do, you know, I don't really take this lightly. I don't see myself doing this for 1 or 2 years. I mean, I'm already 7 years in. So for me, this is a lifelong vocation and I'm here for the community forever. So that's where that comes from.
You know that some people might think that's a threat rather than a promise.
A lot of people think that's a threat, and I'm glad, because some people should be threatened.
You're what I think of as being a sassy nun. You're out there you're out with knives. You are with
I
a
am.
Lovely smile on your face.
I am, and I wrestle with that a lot. I actually sometimes I'm like, you know, maybe you should be a little nicer. Maybe you should be a little sweeter. And then I remind myself, I'm like, look, I'm just being authentic to who I am. And I think that when it comes to being a sister, there are as many ways to be a sister as there are sisters doing it. So there is no one way to manifest the work that we do. And every now and again, you know, you need someone who's going to be direct, blunt, and be unfiltered and say things that other people are afraid to say, even if that results in less popularity. I'm okay with that because it's me being authentic. And whenever I just sit back and go, ooh, girl, you are sassy as hell. I say, you know what? I'm being true to myself. And at the end of the day, my integrity means more to me than popularity.
Oh, well, good for you. And I'm glad you are like that. And I think that's one reason why we get on, because you're just so direct to the point. And I love listening back to your shows just because you are like that. And that's good. They always say you should be who you are. Be yourself. Don't try and invent somebody too much. Otherwise, you can't back it up when you come to the crunch. I don't think you've ever come to that point, have you, in your life that you have to think, oh, I don't know what to say here.
Well, no, I never have. And actually, I was thinking back because I'm quickly approaching, and I don't mean to date you, dear, but I'm quickly approaching my 20th reunion from graduating high school. And I was thinking back to, this was back in the 90s when I was in high school. And I went to school in rural Michigan. And I was surrounded by cornfields and a nuclear power plant and just the most conservative, redneck, trash you can imagine. And I was the only openly gay person in my entire school. And so I made a choice when I was like 14 years old. I said, look, you can either behave in a way that will get you through life easier. Basically, you know, butch it up, pretend to be straight, date women, or you can be yourself unafraid and just raise hell and show these people, you know, my true authentic self. And so I've been like an activist since then, and it's just been me being outspoken and, you know, representing people on the fringe for, I mean, it's just who I am.
Good for you. I mean that genuinely. You're inspiring in a lot of the things you do and what you say. You might frighten off a few people. You might make them a little nervous, a little anxious and everything. But ultimately, it can be inspiring to make people go, hey, you know, Sister Indica can do that. Why can't I?
Right. That's what I want. Everyone's going to criticize you. Mm. Whether you do exactly what they want, be exactly who they want you to be, you're still going to get criticized. You're still going to have people who are going to be against you. So why not just be who you are, unafraid, and just live your life authentically, because you're going to be criticized either way. So wouldn't you rather at the end of the day be who you are?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Which is great for this program, for Chinwag, because I can think of quite a few things I'd like to gently throw at you, knowing full well you're not going to be shy or anything. I'm going to get a really decent answer. Over here in the UK, we hear a lot of really weird stories coming from the States about Donald Trump. Just like, this man is what? Crazy? Off his head? Is this a good representation of him, Sister Indica?
Of Donald Trump, what you're hearing? Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I think about this whole election cycle. It's not just limited to Donald Trump in terms of how we're being perceived internationally. Because we have, in America, we have two parties, two political parties. We have Republicans, which are very conservative, very anti-progress, you know, very anti-gay, anti-trans, very focused on monitoring people's bedroom behaviors and focusing on that. And then you have the Democratic side, which tends to be the more progressive, more pro-gay, pro-woman, you know, side. Well, over the years, they've kind of merged into one. So at this point, you know, you have Donald Trump, you have Ted Cruz on the Republican side, you have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. And it is just this is the most intense election cycle I've experienced in my life. I cannot believe how divided the country is, even along the progressive lines. You know, you have people in the Democratic Party who, like me, myself, I mean, I'm technically not allowed to endorse a candidate as a member of a nonprofit in America. And I'm not endorsing a candidate. I'm just saying I hate Hillary Clinton. I hate Donald Trump. I hate Ted Cruz. They're all awful, awful people. But really, with Donald Trump, I truly think this is an act. I don't really believe that he truly stands behind the things he says. I think that he is a entertainer. And I think he is just playing on all of the fears and hysteria that are just so huge in America right now. America is in a crisis right now. We're at a very just scary time in our country's history. And I'm truly nervous to see how things pan out, because no matter which way it goes, we're fucked.
It's very confusing over here, because like you say, you know, you've got these two camps which are, it's sort of clashing in the middle and becoming the middle ground, aren't they? And that's the more confusing thing. I totally agree with you on Trump. It's almost like he's latched onto, I don't know, a gimmick.
Right.
And it's the gimmick that's taken him forward. And he's saying all these things because he's getting in the press. Any press is potentially good press, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Right. Yeah, it's just a weird thing to see someone who is truly an entertainer. And it seemed like a joke when he first started to run. Everyone thought it was a joke. And I'm just surprised that this many people truly support his policies. It frightens me. I mean, we went through a civil war before, you know, years and years ago. I think if there's any other time in history where that could that could happen again, it's now. We're like, I'm getting ready for battle. Like, I'm fucking scared. Bang, bang. Can I get asylum in the UK? Can I marry you? Can we get gay married and I can live with you and you can save me from all this? Because I'm scared.
Yeah, of course you can, Sister Indica, without a doubt. I feel, though, you are rightly placed in the United States because you're going to be fighting this. Once all this resolves, wrong word, but you know what I mean? You're going to be there at the front. You're not going to be just wearing, I don't know, satin and lace. You're going to be wearing thick metal armor together with a veil that's made out of chainmail.
Also because of where I live. Like, I lived for 14 years. Like, originally I'm from Michigan, like I told you. That's where I went to high school. That's where I was born and raised, in Michigan, which is a northern Midwestern state in the country. And then I lived all over the country, but I lived for 14 years in California, which is as progressive and liberal and, you know, as good as it gets in terms of America. Like, when you think of Americans being, you know, really progressive and pro gay rights and pro women, all these things, that is California. That to a T. That is what California is. Well, now I live in Florida, and Florida is very much a representation of the other side of America, the conservative, the backwards, the racist, homophobic. I'm on the other side now. And so, yeah, I'm in the perfect position for a battle because hey, they're my neighbors. I'll be battling these people. But I don't care. I don't care.
Well, it begs me to ask the question, you know, why the fuck did you move there? But we're going to come to that very shortly indeed. You're listening to Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang, and my special guest, my fantastic guest, she is the person who inspired me to do this program, Sister Indica.
Hey kids, you know that every episode of Chinwag is done completely free, doesn't cost a penny or a dime, and it's just one of the many ways that we sisters try and entice you to donate money to good causes. So, if you have a few pennies to spare, please go now to our website at www.themanchestersisters.org and just click on one of the donate buttons. Every tiny bit helps, and we rely on your generosity. So donate now at www.themanchestersisters.org. Thank you from the bottom of our goodly hearts.
With Sister Bang Bang.
Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang, and my special guest today is Sister Indica. Fantastic that you've joined us. You are, and it doesn't sound like this, does it? You are live from Florida, direct into the Manchester Convent today.
Yes, and I think I am your very first American guest.
Yes, you are. Yes.
And to your listeners in the UK, I'm so sorry. Please don't think that we're not all this awful. I swear.
You're not awful. You're not. And you know, come on, Sister Indica, you should stop this campaign that you've got going at the moment, which is, instead of your Facebook picture, you've got "I hate Sister Indica," isn't it?
Well, yeah.
What's all that about? Stop it. Don't hate you.
I did it as a joke because I I'm a huge fan of psychology, and I'm also a huge fan of branding and marketing. So when you combine those two, it can be very fun and interesting. So I really started it because I think it just, and I talked about this on one of my episodes of my show, Joy Bomb, my podcast. It elicits a certain psychological and emotional response. I can't exactly say what, but it does have an impact. It's jarring. It makes you think for a minute. And I just like playing mind games. Sorry.
No, actually, now you've come to explain it. It seems, yeah, you're absolutely right there. Because it's done the same with me, hasn't it? It's provoked an emotional response. If you just said, everybody loves Sister Indica, nobody would give a shit, would they really?
Well, no. And also what it was really just for me a way to turn the tables on people who disagree with me, dislike me, hate me, shall I say, because I am outspoken. I am direct. I am unfiltered. I am uncensored for the most part. And I'm completely transparent. because I'm so shallow. So it was really a way for me to turn the tables and say, you know what? You might dislike me because I will say things that you're afraid to say, but guess what? I don't care. I will embrace it. Ha ha ha. I even made t-shirts and coffee mugs, bang bang, that have I Hate Sister Indica on it. And
no.
And people can sip their tea out of it and they can love it.
Actually, you could have great fun with that, couldn't you? You just I've tongued Sister Indica while using a coffee mug.
That'll be in my next coffee mug, bang bang. I'm taking that. Thank you very much.
Oh, damn. I better get to the shops quick and get one out for bang bang.
Keep the ideas coming.
Now, you said earlier that you moved from California to Florida. Us Brits, I mean, I've been to Florida many years ago, back in 88. I've never been to California. And we all do get this, you must get impressions of what we lot are over here as islanders. But for California, we see it as sort of very much more laid back, a little bit more easy. In comparison, generalization. Yeah, I know it is. Is that right? What's California like? Or should we sort of hone in on where you came from, which is what was LA, wasn't it? You were one of the LA sisters.
Well, when I first moved to California, my partner actually chose the city. When I was growing up in Michigan, I had always dreamed of living in California anyway. It was a secret dream. I would always talk about it with my friends, and they always thought it was something that I would never do. It was just talk. And it was like, oh, he's never going to do it. He'll be here forever. He's going nowhere. And so that was actually, in many ways and many times in my life, that has been a catalyst for me to prove people wrong. Like, oh, you don't think I'm going to move to California one day? Well, I'll show you. And I eventually went to college in Boston, where I met my partner, and we together, after a couple years of being together, he's like, look, I really want to live in California. And I'm like, me too. I've always wanted to live in California. And I always envisioned either Los Angeles, because that's the entertainment capital. That's movies, TV, music, everything. Or San Francisco, which is very much more hippie, you know, psychedelic. Like, you know, you think of Janis Joplin, Grateful Dead, that whole 60s scene, you know, those hippies. Those are the only two places I ever thought of. Well, he said, well, you know, I really want to live in San Diego because I visited there when I was a kid and I loved it. And I had no idea. I've never even heard of San Diego. I had no idea what it was. It was never on my radar. So he printed out a thick binder full of material, because I am an avid researcher. I research everything to death. Basically, I'm a know-it-all. Unless I don't know it, then I'm fine not knowing it. But if I know something, I know it in and out, because I like to research everything. So he knew the only way to convince me to move to San Diego was to provide enough research to sway my opinion. And he did. I fell in love with it based on the information he pulled and what I read. And we moved there in right after September 11th, actually, 2001. We moved over to San Diego, and I was there for like 10 years. And that's where I actually joined the sisterhood. I joined the sisterhood in December of 2008 in San Diego. And that's where I became a sister, was in that house. And I was there until about 2011. At the end of 2011, I moved to Los Angeles and I joined them. And that was really when my sister, quote unquote, career blossomed and took off. In San Diego, I really think of it, those years, as my, you know, formative years to really learn the history, learn our sistery, really build a good foundation of what a nun, in my opinion, should be, and develop who I was. And then when I moved to LA, it was my time to put all of that into action, to really take every interest I have, like media, all that stuff, and merge it into my sisterhood and really use media to get the word out about who we are, about who I am, and kind of my take on the work. And that's really where it all exploded for me.
Backtracking a little, you said it was also tied in with your partner. What did your partner feel about you becoming a sister, though?
It was his idea.
Oh, right. Oh.
He suggested it because I've always had an interest in drag. When I was a teenager, I would do drag. And I'm talking typical, traditional drag, like mostly more so female impersonation. Like I would get in drag and you would not know I was in drag. You would think I was a woman. And that was what I was going for, was passable, unclockable, female illusion. And I achieved it. And I loved doing that in high school. And then I just kind of lost touch with it and lost interest with it later in my teens and into my adulthood, because I've also been a musician for many years, starting when I was 15. So music really became the focus of my life. And I just got to a point where I had kind of hit a crossroads. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to still like pursue music as a hobby or as an interest. And I was just in a kind of a funk. And, you know, I really was just like down and kind of just kind of depressed and unsure of where I was going to go in life, because I was approaching 30. I was kind of going through like a little mini midlife crisis. And he's like, you know what? You should join the Sisters, because we'd always seen them at Pride festivals and I always loved them from afar. And I was always too petrified to speak to them because they intimidated the hell out of me. And so he'd be like, oh, there they are. Go say hi to them. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'll just look from afar. I don't need to say hi. And we just kept seeing them all over town. And just one day he's like, you know what? You need something to do. You need to get the hell out of the house and get a life. Hey, go join them. And I'm like, really? You're sure it's drag? You're cool with that? He's like, yes, join them. So it was actually his idea. And I'm sure he regrets that decision at this point. Because little did he know, he thought it would just be a little hobby here and there. And it became, I mean, has never overtaken my life, because I keep a very rigid ratio, like sister to secular life ratio, so that it doesn't overtake my life completely. But it's definitely way more than a hobby. It's something I'm very passionate about, very serious about. And but yeah, he actually comes to events. We met when I get in sister face, as we call it, manifesting. When I manifest and do an event, he'll show up, he'll hang out, he'll do Pride with us. I mean, he's very supportive. I'm very, very lucky.
You are. I mean, that's brilliant to hear, because I mean, I'm single at the moment. I'm trying my best, but it's always at the back of my mind thinking, how will somebody cope with the Sisters? Now, it's very similar in how I saw the Sisters as you did, in that you saw them from afar, you respected them, you thought, wow, but you would never approach them. I find it fascinating nowadays that people will say, oh, actually, you really are approachable. We thought you were sort of very distant and everything. I'm thinking, we do our best to be actually very, very approachable. I wonder where people get this from. And I think I'm going to drop in a very well-known name now, Serene McKellen, who we met at Manchester Pride last August. And we went up to him and said hello. And he said, you know, I've always been frightened of the Sisters. And we went, why is that? He says, well, you're so intimidating. You always look so intimidating. Which I said, flipping egg, you in quite a few of your roles, Serene, as being ultimately intimidating. That's the true interpretation of intimidating. And he got me thinking, why? Because we do look fabulous. We do go out of our way to dress up and everything. Why do people find us intimidating?
Well, the reason and it's so ironic that I was so frightened of the Sisters and intimidated by them, and I have become one of the most intimidating and frightening nuns that have ever existed in all of his history. The irony is not lost on me, Bang Bang. But the reason I think that we're intimidating, and I truly believe this even today, when I saw the Sisters, I did not see a man with clown makeup and a fabric on his head and a dress. I did not see that. I saw an otherworldly creature that was superhuman, more human than human, beyond gender. There was a magic, almost like seeing something from another dimension. And so it's a mind fuck. It fucks with your head. It fucks with your ideas. And can I swear on Chinwag? Is this a no swearing zone?
Too late for that now, love.
Are you gonna bleep me out? Well, I do see it as a form of drag. I think where a lot of people get confused is that they say that the Sisters are drag queens.
Right.
I do think we're doing drag. I don't think that we're drag queens. We're obviously drag nuns, but we are on a spectrum of drag, at least more so here. I know in the UK that doing like full white face makeup is not as big as it is here in America. very few sisters don't wear whiteface. Very few. I'm talking, I could probably count them on one hand, because the whiteface is so a part of the sisterhood here in the U.S. as it has kind of grown over the years to be our trademark in a sense. But yeah, that helps to also take it to another otherworldly level. If I were just in a nun's habit, I don't feel like it would take it to that otherworldly level. So I think the makeup really helps to transport people. But that's where also it goes back to what I'm saying. It's a real mind fuck, because you're like, man, woman, secular, clergy. It's like all these different, you know, the whole, you have every bit of the thoughts about religion and right and wrong and taboo. All of these thoughts and emotions are sparked when you see a sister, and that can do anything. Like, that can have any kind of reaction. You may respond positively or negatively to that based on your trigger points. I would say, you know, we're in very much a trigger warning society. Everything triggers people, and I see a sister as just a walking trigger. I mean, we're going to trigger so many different things for you.
Do you know, this is all why I want to come to the States. You know, we have a great community over here, but in many ways, the sister community is still in its infancy and has been for a long time. And that's because I think we've talked about this before, we have a different benefit structure over here. And over in the States, you know, people are more willing to give money because there's less of a support network from the government going on, in most respects, but also the way that you guys use the makeup, you use bigger groups of people, you are more community orientated in that, and it's very difficult over here to get out and to convince people we're not just putting this on for the night, we're not just dressing up in habit for the night and having a bit of a laugh and that's it. You know, it's, and when you describe the background, you know what the background of the sisters is and what other things that we do. They're fascinated, aren't they? They're drawn in. They're thinking, I never knew you did so much.
Well, that's the thing with the sisterhood is when the sisters first began, it was not, hey, guys, let's become nuns and raise money for the community. That was not why the sisters started. The sisters started, it was more of a street theater kind of thing. It was to, you know, kind of shake things up. Everyone was very, you know, in this one, like, and it happens all the time. It's happening now. And it always happens every decade. You know, gay men fall into this very similar kind of look. They all have a similar hairstyle. They'll all start dressing the same. It's just like this. It becomes very homonormative kind of thing. And they are like, you know what? Let's shake this up. Let's shake this up. Let's get, like, kind of shock people and go, look at us. We're not a clone, the Castro clone, they called it, with, you know, wearing like the t-shirts and the blue jeans and everyone looked the same. They just wanted to shake things up. And it was had a very street theater kind of vibe to it. So even if you did just want to put a habit on and go out and stand on a corner, that's good enough for me. Because
you probably earn a few dollars as well if you did that.
You know, I have a very strict no refunds policy too, Bing Bang. Just let me just, I want everyone to know, I want to make that very, very clear. No refunds. I feel like, you know, I feel like whether you're raising money, whether you're doing safe sex outreach by passing out condoms and talking about safe sex, or you are just there, it is all valid. It is all real. It is all... none of it's a waste of time. Just being present, just being there. And if you get to talk to people, I've had sisters say this to me, and it's something that really stuck with me years ago, and I hold on to it very, very firmly, especially when you get other people saying, well, this is the work of a sister. No, this is what we're supposed to do. I'm like, look, the most important thing you can do is give your time. That's it. If I'm going to go out and I go to the bar and I talk to one person, and I give them my time, you'll never get that time back. You can't even put a price on the value of that time you're spending. So to me, that's enough. That's it.
It is. It is the value, isn't it? Just that one thing. I used to think it was just for shaking buckets. And I actually prefer the outreach work now to the raising. I'm not saying the raising money is not important, but yeah, I do like the unplannedness of it. You get ready, you go out. It's like going on stage without a script in certain things, isn't it?
Yes.
You're prepared. You know what you can do. You know how to react, but you're not sure in what order it's going to come at you. And that's the exciting thing for me.
You never know. And I love that. I love all the reactions. I like the positive. I like the negative. I like it all because you know what? You're feeling something. And I don't care if it's good or bad. I want you to feel. Because there's nothing wrong with bad emotions. They're valid. All emotions are valid. You should feel everything. I think we are here on this planet to feel everything, the entire range. So as much as our job is to spread joy, I want to spread emotion. I want you to feel something. And I don't care what that is, because that's not for me to tell you or dictate. But you will feel, God damn it. You're going to feel.
That's a t-shirt.
I'll make you will feel, God damn it. Yes, I will make you feel something.
I like the God damn it bit on the
God
end.
God damn it.
God damn it. I like it. I'll do it in the clipped English. You'll do it in the American. You are listening, of course, to my special guest, Sister Indica, here on Chinwag. Sister Indica, are you ready for Bang Bang's Quick Six?
Honey, I was born ready.
Good answer.
Ready at the back there. It's time for Sister Bang Bang's Quick Six.
It is Chinwag with Sister Bang Bang and my special guest from the other side of the ocean. It is Sister Indica.
Oh my God, I'm so excited for Bang Bang's Quick Six.
This is brilliant. Now, I know you listen to the program and you know what these Quick Six are. So I want you to blank your memory. You have not heard these before, right?
Oh no. Okay. Yes. Okay. Suspension of disbelief.
You're an actress.
I'm acting right now.
You're acting right now. Okay, six quick questions. As you know, you cannot ask any form of explanation on them at all, but you've got to supply an answer. Okay.
It's like a Rorschach test.
It is, yes, absolutely. Yes, I think we covered that in episode 2. Somebody's like, it's like an ink blot test, this. Right, question one. Is it going to be tea or coffee?
Okay, well, I actually love coffee. I like the amount of caffeine it has in it, but I hate coffee breath. So I drink tea, and I also put ginger in my tea. I cut up fresh ginger and boil it in the water and then add my tea bags, and I drink tea every single day, and I pretend I'm British because I drink English breakfast tea.
What's the difference between over there in the States, between ordinary tea and English breakfast? What's the taste difference?
Well, you know, you have Earl Grey. I mean, it's the same as stuff that you guys have over there. It's just tea is tea, isn't it? I just prefer the taste of Earl Grey has more of a flowery kind of taste to it, which I don't like. I really prefer the taste of English breakfast tea. It's just, I like just strong black tea. So I don't put any sugar in it. I put ginger, which makes it even stronger and more intense.
And good for your tummy as well, isn't it?
Yes. I'm not very subtle, Bang Bang. So I like it. I like my intensity in every area of my life.
I love the reason on it though, that too. You love coffee, but you won't drink it because of coffee breath.
Right. It's your breath smells so bad. So yeah.
Oh, brilliant. And of course, you'll have heard many times that we've come, I've done recordings from the Richmond Tea Rooms, which when you come over here, we're going to spend an awful lot of time at those Richmond Tea Rooms.
I want tea. I want the little snacks, the little cakes and the little finger sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And I want a full photo shoot. We're going to be painted and we're going to be gorgeous. I've got to be photographed in there. I am obsessed with Alice in Wonderland and I love tea. So I'm all about it.
But I think I can arrange that. And of course, the finger sandwiches and everything will come on those multiple layer tray. You know, the little plates, that big plate, and then there's a little stalk and a smaller plate and
yes,
higher stalk and a little hand. A bit like Downton Abbey.
Well, I don't watch Downton Abbey, and it was so long before I realized it was not Downtown Abbey. It's Downton Abbey, America, just so you know. Just spoiler alert, there's no W, it's Downton. I mean, there's one W, there's not two. Anyway, I was so excited listening to your show and talking about the tea rooms and stuff that I actually found somewhere near me that does authentic British tea experiences, and you can make a reservation and they do the whole trays of finger sandwiches and stuff like that. So I'm going to get some of my sisters to go. We're all going to go, and it's in a very conservative part of town, so it's going to scare the hell out of them, and I can't wait. So excited.
And of course, when I come over and visit you, which I definitely have to do, then you've got to take me down there, and then it'll be a total surprise when I open my mouth and they found out that really I am English.
And do you guys do Yelp in the UK? Do you do Yelp?
Yelp. It half rings a bell, that.
Well, it's a review site. You can review restaurants, you can review hotels. It's basically a place for you to give your opinion on something. So if I'm going to look up a restaurant, I'll go to Yelp, look up the restaurant, and see what people have said about it. Well, this is going to be the best review they could possibly get, because you're going to tell them whether or not they're really authentic or they're just ripping Americans off.
The English sister will have arrived.
Yeah, I want you to tell them.
I can see I'm going to be there for like 6 months at this rate.
Oh yeah, you're we're not letting you go once you're here. You fuck with me, you're stuck with me. Bang bang.
Wow, another T-shirt slogan. Right, that's question one of Bang Bang's Quick Six. Moving on to question two for Sister Indica: is it going to be veg or meat?
It's going to be veg, and the reason why is because I was vegetarian for years, actually, and it was a really great way to lose weight, to be healthy, and then I just said, screw it, let me just go ahead and eat meat, and I don't care if I gain weight. I just didn't care for a long time, but recently, I would say probably about a month ago, I'm like, you know what, you got to get back in shape, you got to get healthy. My body just prefers a more vegetarian kind of lifestyle. It just, my body feels better when my diet is more balanced toward vegetables and healthy proteins. So absolutely veg all the way.
Do you find it interesting when people say they go for a veg diet deliberately to lose weight, but everybody who is a vegetarian is not necessarily stick thin, are they?
No. Have you seen Katie Lang? She's a vegan.
Yeah, right at one end of the spectrum here. But so you tend to think, well, what's going wrong here? Or is the wrong word to use? You know what I mean? It's like, if you're vegetarian, why aren't people stick thin?
Well, because, you know, just because something is not meat-based doesn't mean it's not low in, it doesn't mean it's low in fat. You know, especially there's just lots of foods you could eat that are not meat based, but are super high in fat. And if that's what your diet is comprised of, well, then you're going to gain weight. So it's just understanding what's healthy, a balanced diet, not trying to go overboard, but trying to have a more balanced diet and just having it be more vegetables to meat. I mean, I still eat meat. I still eat chicken, but it's not like my meal isn't mostly chicken. It's mostly vegetables. I'm eating a lot of broccoli, a lot of green beans. You know, I love my plate is 3/4 vegetables and 1/4 meat, and it's grilled chicken. And my body just loves it. I eat salads for lunch, lightly dressed, and my body just likes it. So I'm really listening to my body. My body is like, you know what? I feel good when I have a more plant-based diet. Not completely. I do love I love tofu, but I don't eat tofu every day. I probably eat it only once a week. But yeah, mostly plant-based, and I love that. Or fruits and vegetables too. You didn't ask me about fruits, but you know what? I know the rules of this game, so I'm going to say I also love fruit.
It's interesting. I've just been thinking when you were talking about the different things in a vegetarian diet. It's odd that it's called a vegetarian diet when you eat things like cheese. Because cheese is not vegetarian, is it?
Oh, it is. Well, yeah.
But it's not vegetables, though,
right,
is it?
Right. It's what they would call an ovo-lacto vegetarian. So someone who does eat dairy and eggs, which I do. Actually, I'm not really two, I mean, I do eat cheese here and there. I do not drink milk. I can't stand milk. When I was in second grade, I was at the cafeteria in school, and I used to love drinking milk. I would drink milk every single day. I loved it. And I got a carton of milk, and it was rotten. And I didn't know, and I drank it. I drank a sip of it, and the taste of rotten milk has never left me. So right. I can't smell milk or taste it and without remembering the rottenness of it. So I have not drank milk for years, and I drink rice milk.
Okay. Well, yeah, I tend to go for almond milk as well.
I like almond milk, too. I prefer rice milk because it tastes more like real milk. It doesn't have too many flavors in it. It tastes more like, you know, a 1% or a 2% milk, not a full fat milk. It just has less of a flavor. And I like that because I have smoothies for breakfast every day. I have protein shakes, you know, with fruit and protein powder and rice milk. And I love it.
Gosh, I'm going to be on a healthy diet when I come and visit you, aren't I?
Yes, you will.
About time. Now, you talk about milk-based products. I try and avoid them because I'm lactose intolerant.
Me too.
It just upsets my tummy.
Right, me too.
But did you know that, and you probably do, that Asian people who don't have a dairy-based diet as much as we do can smell off milk on us Europeans and probably Americans as well, because we have so much dairy in our diet. They can smell it oozing out of our skin.
I absolutely believe that because the first boy I ever dated when I was 17 years old, the very first boy, I was at the time a very strict vegetarian. And this is how smooth I am. Here you go. So we were making out and I stopped making out with him and I said, "Did you eat steak today?" And he's like, "Well, yeah, I could taste it. I could taste it on his tongue, even though it was hours ago. I didn't eat meat. So I could taste it. I could smell it on him. So I'm not surprised that dairy doesn't, it's not a thing in Japan. It's not a thing at all in Japan where dairy is just not part of their diet at all. So absolutely, just like with meat, if you don't eat meat, you can smell it on people. You can smell it. And there was a diet called the Atkins diet. Are you familiar with the Atkins diet?
I remember that, yes.
It's basically all they did was eat steak and butter and cheese. Like, it was like this crazy diet where it was very meaty diet. Well, I had to visit a client and their entire call center had gotten on the Atkins diet. And all I could smell was meat in their sweat. It was like a room of meat. It smelled so bad. Mm. So I totally believe it. They can absolutely smell the dairy on us.
Makes you wonder about if you could really engineer the smell that you want. If you're going out on a Saturday night, think, rather than smearing myself with, I don't know, Chanel or something, what can I eat to actually produce the, I don't know, flush throughs? I don't know what you call them.
Hey, they say really good things about pineapple in a lot of ways. So I say have a pineapple rich diet.
I love the fact that you were halfway through entertaining a young gentleman and you kind of stopped and went, "Have you been eating steak?"
That is classic me. Okay. I've always been a mess. I always will be a mess. And you just have to, you know what? I just learned to love it. You have to learn to love it. Whatever cards you were dealt, whatever you're working with, the sooner that you love it, the better off you're going to be.
I can almost imagine Blanche out of Golden Girls doing exactly that scene.
See, I am, and now you're talking, okay, you're talking about Golden Girls now. That's a trigger for me. You're triggering me.
Oh, right.
But it's a good trigger because I am a Golden Girls historian. I study these episodes as if I am preparing for a thesis. I have watched them all hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, memorizing them. I am so obsessed with the Golden Girls. I often thought, as every gay man does, you think, what Golden Girl are you? And for years, I thought I was Blanche because I was slutty. And then for years, I thought maybe I was Rose because I'm naive to a lot of things. And, you know, I have a lack of common sense in a lot of ways. And then I thought maybe I was Dorothy because I'm very sarcastic, very dry. And then I realized that I'm actually Sophia. I'm Sophia.
Right. Why is God? Explain why.
Because she is fun. She is sassy. She is unfiltered, uncensored, and very wise. So I think of myself as definitely Sophia. Because people come to me for advice. They come to me for advice. And they come to me for a reality check sometimes, too.
And also, I think Sophia was... she knew everything. She knew what was going on. She didn't have to be told. Yeah.
Didn't have to be told. And she was just fun. A lot of fun. And that's what I mean, life's supposed to be fun. It really is. And especially the work that we do as sisters, it's supposed to be fun. So I like to have fun. That's why we do this. I mean, I don't spend 2 hours painting my face to be miserable. I may look miserable. I might look like a pissed off bitch, but I'm actually having a great time, Bang Bang. I'm really having fun. I swear. Don't let the eyebrows fool you.
It's not the eyebrows, it's the mouth. I look closely at some of your pictures because I pick up, I look at lots of different pictures of, doesn't matter to be sisters or anybody who puts on a lot of makeup, to analyse how they do it, what they do, the shape and everything. Because you paint over your lips, don't you, to make a different mouth shape than your real secular one. And I've often wondered, because you don't put an upturn on it, you don't put a smile on it, you're quite deliberate in the fact that you put a stern mouth on your sister face.
Well, when I do my makeup, I want to completely reshape my entire face, not just my lips, my cheekbones, my eyes, eyebrows, everything, because when I go out as a boy, I don't want people to know it's me. I don't want to be recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to, when I'm Sister Indica, have a very specific look so that when you see me in a crowd, you're like, there she is. That's her. So I'm not a sister that's always going to paint a different face and change it up all the time, because I'm into branding. I'm into marketing. That's the world I live in. That is my mindset at all times. I'm always a very branding, marketing focused person. So I know. And I deliberately created a brand years ago that I would have a very set and specific look. So I want to exaggerate everything, completely reshape the face, so that when you see me out of face, you're like, I never even recognized it. I never knew it was you. That's the reaction I want. Because if I were to paint naturalistically, like to my actual features, then you can see right through it and you know it was me. And that's the fun, is the transformation. I love to completely transform visually.
You see, I'm kind of analyzing you a little here, and I'm thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you will, dear, that you paint your face differently because when you're as a boy, you want to earwig into what people think of Sister Indica without them knowing it's you.
Well, no, I don't.
No, you're not.
Okay. No, it's I just like to be left alone.
Completely the opposite of Indica.
Right. I am extroverted I'm like an extrovert and an introvert combined. So I am as much as I am outgoing, I am as much introverted. So when I'm Sister Indica, I'm very outgoing. I want to talk to you. I want to interact with you. I want to, you know, have fun and take it up 10 notches. But when I'm my secular self, I want to be left alone.
Right.
So I want to be, it's a complete transformation because I am as shy as I am outgoing. So
I wonder if we do this for what that is one of the main reasons, because I can truly identify that. I'm going out tonight as my as my boy self, and I know that I will have problems out there. I know I will want to find a corner to back into to observe people. I'll be a little nervous. I went out last week and people going, "God, you boy, you need to go out." I went, "Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd rather stay at home." And yet, I put on Sister Bang Bang and whoosh, it's where's the nearest spotlight? Get me a microphone. And it's odd that, isn't it? It's not a mask, I don't think. We are extending a little bit of ourselves big time when we become sisters. And yet as our real boy selves, we're exposing all of ourselves in many, all our facets out there.
Well, I don't really know if we do. I see identity as like a house, think of it as a beautiful mansion identity. And every single room is a different facet to that identity. You're one way when you're at work, with coworkers, with clients. You're a totally different way with your good friends. You're a completely different way with a partner. You're different with family. You're different in a social situation. I mean, there's different sides of you that are being shown that you intentionally show or withhold at all times. So to me, all Indica is she's the attic. You know, she's one room of this mansion, and that's one side of me. It's not any more real or fake than any of the other sides I show. It's just you show different sides to different people on different occasions. That's you when you're at a restaurant. That's one side. I mean, it's just always different pieces of the same. It's different rooms of the same house.
So would you say then that if Sister Indica had never come about in your life, that that attic door would have stayed locked forever?
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
But I have different rooms that I've opened the door to a lot more. I mean, you know, like I told you, I've been a writer, a musician, all of these different sides of me, always in a creative outlet. Those are just all different rooms. Okay. And those rooms were just very well known. And then, you know, I closed that door and opened the attic door, and there she was.
Ta-da. She came out.
Here she is, world. Sorry about it. I'm so sorry, world. What I've done to you, I'll be paying for this the rest of my life.
Well, I've done to you and what I'll continue to do to you for the rest of my life.
Sorry.
It's a Sister Indica playing by Quick Six. It's a Sister Bang Bang on Chinwag, and we've got to question number 3. Right. It's bitch or butch.
Sometimes, dear listener, you have to admit that things turn out for a reason. We're partway through Bang Bang's Quick Six, and there is so much more we talked about, but I have a rule, a strict rule, that Chinwag does not go over an hour. So here's the end of episode 11. Oh no, I hear you cry. Sister Bang Bang, you can't do this to us. Leave us hanging. Well, my pretty little thing, for the first time ever on Chinwag, I'm announcing that you've just listened to the first part of my Chinwag with Sister Indica. You can hear more from the two gobby cows in part 2. Tune in for episode 12 of
Chinwag.